Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
It's time to change the situation if Tottenham want to change.
It's in the past, it's in the past. And we look forward, buy our football positive. We're wearing Tottenham shirts, we buy the Tottenham white.
And still Ricky Villa. What a fantastic run! He scored!
That's going to have a crack. He is, you know. Oh, I think!
It's a record!
Here's Lucas Moura. Oh, they've done it!
Hello and welcome to another episode of The Tottenham Way. It's the dream team back again, the two Toms. Tom Barkley, the son here, Tom Allnut, none of that Dan Kilpatrick and Marcus Buckland nonsense. We haven't done a pod for a while, Tom. Nice to do one. Unfortunately, off the back of another defeat in the league for Ange. But we can also touch on Frankfurt. I was there. I'm sure you watched it, Tom. A massive night. And, you know, where this sort of mad season of, I guess, elation in the Europa League and absolute desperation in the Premier League all fits together. But first and foremost, before we get into any of that, let's talk Christian Romero, because he's done an interview with an Argentine journalist, I think one that's quite close to him, which he had some quite telling comments. So I'll let you pick it up and then we'll sort of pick the bones out of it, Tom.
Yeah, I mean, I guess we've sort of seen it this morning, haven't we? But we know at this point that the interview was done after the Frankfurt game, so after Thursday night and before the Forest game, obviously. So I think sometime over the weekend, perhaps Friday. We know that it was done at Tottenham's training ground, but I think it's fair to say that this wasn't a sort of club interview, as it were. The club were aware of it. It wasn't done in secret or anything like that, but it was very much a interview instigated and organised by Romero with the Argentinian journalist Gaston Edul, who has a brother, and they have a sort of a joint podcast and YouTube channel. And Romero is pretty close with those two journalists. And I guess, you know, the quotes are probably what we sort of have suspected for a while, haven't we, with Romero? I think it's maybe worth saying that I think these clips that have been published so far, to my mind, Tom, when you were watching them, I don't know if you agree, but they were very stitched together. You know, it didn't appear like they flowed through like they had done in the original audio. It was very much like someone had heavily edited the clips so that it was very punchy and that the words kind of hit together in the most dramatic way, I guess. Which is not to say that they're inaccurate in any way, for two reasons. One, because if the interview was organised by Romero, I'm 99. I know that Romero would have had approval and knew exactly what was going to go out. So in no way has he been misrepresented. Equally, I guess, when you don't publish the full version of these kind of interviews, sometimes some of the context is lost. And equally, I guess, sometimes some of the kind of natural flow of the interview as well is lost. I mean, for example, I know that the first question, which was what keeps motivating you, when he talks about, you know, being open to anything and to going to new places, that was not the immediate question before the next question, which is about, you know, what league would you like to play in that you haven't played in before. That question comes much further down the line in the interview. And yeah, in the clip, for example, they're very much put together, which makes it look as though the two things are very connected. So I think that is worth bearing in mind. That said, let's not, you know, be about the bush. This is very much Romero saying, I'm ready to leave Spurs. I would love to play in Spain. Come and get me, Atletico Madrid or Real Madrid. Do you agree, Tom?
Yeah, this is in tabloid parlance a classic come and get me play, isn't it, really? To anyone yeah. In Spain, La Liga. I mean, I suppose I don't want to speculate too much on the ins and outs of how the interview was done and what Romero knew about what he wanted to push out, because I don't know. But the cynic in me, given that Romero has, as you say, got a very close relationship with the journalist. And this is not a criticism at all of the journalist. I mean, he's been provided some amazing insight throughout the season with with the Romero situation over various things, but it does feel like, I think Romero being well aware of what was coming out of the interview and how it would be portrayed. And it felt very much like, him sort of speaking up about how he'd be open to another move. And when you have someone saying that so publicly at this stage of the season, it feels like it's only going to go one way. But I guess...
Also the fact that he's organised it, right? That's key here. The fact that he is the one who set this interview up. And the question itself, what league have you not played in before, but would you like to play in? Very leading question. I wouldn't want to speculate, but I wonder if it's the kind of question that they say, here's the question you ask, and this is the answer I give.
Yeah. Do you like Madrid? What about the red and white stripes? I guess so. Look, I suppose, on Romero this summer, I don't think anyone will be shocked if he leaves. He's got, 2 years left. He's clearly an influential player, but to be honest, performance-wise, he hasn't been on top of his game, I don't think, this season. He's obviously been injured a lot. And the fact that Spurs, right at the last minute of the January window, put in a massive bid for Mark Guerhi makes you sort of think... you don't do that if you do actually want to sign him. If it was a genuine sort of move to try and sign Guerhi, you don't sign a player like that and not play him. So it already felt like maybe they were thinking of succession planning. But it is interesting seeing it play out so publicly. Romero sort of looking to leave, and if I was a Spurs fan, I would be disappointed, because I remember personally doing an interview with Romero a couple of summers ago, and I know time changes and events happen and opinions change, but myself and Matt Barlow of the Mail put it to Romero back in pre-season in Perth that Spurs fans basically accuse you of prioritising your country over your club and you don't really care enough about it. And he pushed back in such a strong way that it made you sort of think, maybe he is being misrepresented and misconstrued. But then what's happened since, particularly this season, makes you think, I don't know about that. I do feel like I don't know if his heart's really in it at this point enough when it comes to Spurs. And Andrew probably pushed back on that massively. He always backs Romero. He never seems to criticise him at all, even when there have been probably opportunities to do that this season, either through performance or some of the things he's said and done publicly on social media or in interviews. And I bet you he probably won't even have a go at him after this interview. If he gets asked about it on Friday, but I don't see Romero's heart being quite in the Tottenham into Tottenham as much as it was. Although that's not exactly a shock takeaway from this particular interview.
You know what though, like there was a period. When was it? I think it was about 18 months ago. Maybe it was pre-Ange, and I remember speaking to someone who sort of knew Romero quite well, and he was adamant that Romero actually was really enjoying the sort of continuity at Tottenham, that he was really enjoying kind of being settled there, that he was happy in London, that he loved playing in the Premier League. And that after quite a sort of stop-start kind of few years, where if you remember, he kind of left Argentina, went to Genoa, signed for Juventus, but never played for Juventus, stayed on loan at Genoa, went to Atalanta, was on loan there, then signed permanently. Then he came to Spurs. It was a real kind of hodgepodge few years where he played well and his trajectory was clearly upward. But it was a very kind of, here and there sort of period in his career. And they said, he's really enjoying just kind of being at Spurs, feeling like he's in an important part of the club and the team. And I think something just sort of changed maybe in the last year or so.
So what's changed? Is it purely Spurs' terrible league form and he's a World Cup winner? And yes, they're on, maybe might win the Europa League. And he spoke about, how much he wants to achieve that in that interview. Or is it more than that? I mean, we had the comment, didn't we, about him saying how giving praise, I suppose, specifically to the Argentine medics, with no mention of the Spurs medics. Maybe we're reading in too much into that, but I'm not sure if we are. Has he just been an unhappy camper this season, really, just through a multitude of factors? I mean, we're already speculating, but
also,
wouldn't be surprising, would it, if that was the case?
It also, remember, in December, he, criticised the Spurs board, didn't he, basically? I mean, I don't think there's even even a need to qualify that with appeared to criticise like he did. I mean, he said Liverpool have strengthened, Chelsea have strengthened, City have strengthened, United have strengthened. I hope the ones responsible know who they are, you know, for the reason why we haven't progressed in the same way. I mean, it was clear, you know, he was basically saying that Spurs haven't spent enough, they haven't backed the managers enough, you know, and I agree with you. I think the dig at the Tottenham medical team in March was also clear, saying the Argentina physios were responsible for his recovery. I mean, what's changed, I think, probably in both directions. I think Romero, after winning the World Cup with Argentina, suddenly, you know, became a much more high-profile global defender than he was before, you know, and suddenly he was being talked about as one of the best defenders in the world. He was being linked with the biggest clubs in Europe. And at the same time, you know, let's say since that point, to be honest, you know, Tottenham have been unravelling, you know, and they've gone in the opposite direction. And I think he probably thinks of himself as being in a top bracket of defenders. And he probably thinks that Spurs are no longer in a top bracket of clubs. And to be fair, that's probably true both ways. I think the asterisk, to be honest, there is that Tottenham would claim, and I think rightfully so, that they haven't seen much of the kind of world-class Romero that he thinks he is. You know, in the last year or so, have we seen Romero performing consistently in the way that, you know, for example, Van Dijk has at Liverpool? Absolutely not. I mean, he doesn't even touch those players in terms of his consistency of performance, in terms of his fitness. I mean, he's missed this season alone about, I think, close to 30 games this season. He's hardly played, you know. So I personally think that Spurs are at the point now where this could be a fantastic signing for Atletico Madrid. I think he could be a brilliant player for a big club like that. I also think at 50, 60 million, it would be a brilliant sale for Tottenham as well.
Yeah, that was kind of where I was heading, really, is whether this might be a move that suits all parties. Romero, it seems, when you start to sort of at least put it all together, it does feel like he would like to leave. Atletico, maybe that would fit perfectly. But yeah, for Spurs, I mean, what would they be missing? Yes, on his day, he's been fantastic, but I don't think there have been that many of those days this season. He doesn't seem particularly happy. He gets injured quite a lot. And for that kind of money, with Spurs this summer, particularly if they don't win the Europa League, I do feel like they're going to have an issue with a bit of a bloated squad before you even talk about bringing in new players. And in the age of PSR, even though Spurs are sort of fine on that account, they only really have Romero as their main sellable asset out of players they'd actually want to let go. I mean, obviously, the likes of Bergvall's value, I presume, has gone through the roof, but they're not trying to sell him, right? Whereas Romero, potentially they might do. So I think maybe it might suit all parties. And I don't know how much they would be... I don't know how much they'd be missing. But maybe I'm underplaying what a good player he is on his day. What do you think? Finally, on Romero.
I mean, on his day, he makes any team in the Premier League better, doesn't he? I mean, on his day, Romero is fantastic. And you know, but I think you have to say, like, what are they... If the question is, what are they losing? Well, this season, not much. And to be honest, I reckon behind the scenes, a lot of people would say they'd be losing a lot of baggage, you know, because there's been a lot of stuff, I think, with Romero that hasn't necessarily been reported and said. And I actually think Ange has done a pretty good job this season of keeping a lid on it all, you know, in terms of... I mean, I remember doing a piece about Tottenham's medical, you know, the injury situation a couple of months ago and talking to people about that. And Romero was one of the names that came up when it was said that some of the players need to take personal responsibility more, you know, for their recovery routines, for being in the right place at the right time. It's almost as if, I think at times, Spurs don't really know where Romero is. Do you remember that comment that Conte said when he was, you know, partying after the World Cup and celebrating? And Conte kind of said, I hope he comes back or something. He said, I don't even know when he's going to come back. I just hope he does or something, you know? And it was a joke, but I actually think there is a bit of that with Romero, that sometimes people don't really know what he's doing. And, you know, he's a vice captain of the club. To what extent, you know, and this isn't, you know, this isn't a drive-by on Romero, but to what extent do you have, can a really good dressing room and a cohesive team carry a personality like that? I don't know how many clubs do that. Maybe you do with one or two, but with a central defender who's meant to be a vice captain, I think it's a lot of hassle.
It's interesting, isn't it, when you think about it and all, why Ange hasn't criticised Romero at all. Honestly, I can't think of one occasion where he has. And I suppose thinking about it, maybe he's such an influence, particularly with the Spanish-speaking contingent in the dressing room, that it would be a bad idea to do that, particularly when your results as poor as they've been. I mean, let's be honest, there have been times this season, including now, where if Ange turned up the players, he might be done. And Romero, doing that with Romero, perhaps that's part of the reason. It'd be interesting in a season when they have been doing better, and if the manager was on firmer ground, maybe he might have been more critical of him. I don't know. It's all ifs, buts and maybes. Let's move on to Forest. I was in Frankfurt on the Thursday for what felt like the best and biggest night of Spurs's for Spurs in ages, probably this season. You know, Frankfurt might not be an amazing team, but I think this is the first time in over a year they hadn't scored at home. They got a formidable hostile environment. They got a striker who I would not be surprised if he went for big money in the summer, and Hugo Ekitike. It was, and obviously Spurs have had a disastrous season where they look so leaky at the back. So to go and win 1-0 in what was the most mature, committed performance, which often, you know, left me thinking, why can't they do that more often? Because it wasn't just like how committed they were in terms of, you know, Maddison winning that penalty, putting his body on the line. It was also really low risk in the way they played. You know, they whacked it clear, Van de Ven or Vicario, when they were in any kind of situation where there could be a potential for danger, which is in huge contrast to so many other games this season. I was left wondering why they couldn't do it more often. It was a wonderful night. The scenes at the end with the passion and the hugging between the manager and the staff and the players really suggested to me that these are players that really do still care. They do still care about the manager. And there is a cohesion there that at other times in other clubs wouldn't be there. And Ange referenced that after the game when he said, you know, I've never felt like the dressing room was splintered once. Anyway, that was then. 3 days later, yes, it's back to the Premier League in this season where the best Spurs could hope for is how much pride they can salvage from a pretty desperate situation. But it was just rinse and repeat from so many other games this season where they concede early. Then when the pressure's off, because they look like they're going to lose, they start to have a fight, but they do play some good football. But ultimately, they lost. And we've just seen it so many times this season that I was just left completely deflated after Thursday night. And I'm not even a Tottenham fan. How did you see it, Tom?
You know what? I thought against Forest, I've seen worse from Tottenham. I don't know if that's if that's praise, but I've seen a lot worse this season. I thought in the second half they actually played all right. Like, I thought they created three or four good chances, some great, you know, was it one or two really good saves from Sells, that amazing clearance off the line from the Kulusevski header. I think if Spurs had got one back a bit earlier, 10 minutes earlier or so, I think they could easily have maybe got a 2-2 draw out of it. But I agree, it's you know, to be 2-0 down at home to Forest in the first, whatever it was, 15 minutes, that's just not a sign of a good team, not a sign of a serious team, a solid team, you know, who's you know, plugged in and focused. And that's been the problem with Spurs. And we've heard this from Ange, you know, a few times, you know, we just have this ability to concede soft goals, you know, and it's like, yeah, the team does. And that is part of your job, unfortunately, is to ensure that they don't concede these soft goals, you know, and to unravel, you know, not just concede one soft goal, but to concede two or three on the bounce. You know, that's been a real, you know, mark of this season. I mean, what was the atmosphere like in the stadium, Tom? Because I guess we always say, don't we, these league matches, they may not mean much in terms of the table. Although I personally think, you know, there is a difference between finishing 12th or 13th and finishing 16th or 17th. People will remember Tottenham finishing just above the relegation zone. They will forget them finishing in the middle of the table, but they will remember them finishing just outside the relegation zone. I do think there is an optics difference there. But I guess the main thing here is you know, we've said all along, is the vibes, isn't it? Did you feel like people were in open revolt against this performance, or was it more just kind of like deflation?
No. I think there was a sort of level of expectancy about it, unfortunately. There were boos at halftime, quite loud ones. But to be honest, it's not like apathy, but it wasn't far off. And actually, the stadium, it was probably 90% full, so it's not nothing. But I did spot sort of empty seats everywhere, really. And I think that sort of, what's the right phrase? Just sort of, I don't know how to put it, but like just sort of acceptance, I suppose, checking of the out. Season. Yeah, checking out has kind of started to show itself by people not turning up to the matches. Forest fans were great because obviously it was a really big win for them. Not this is a Forest or a top of the table chat, but obviously they'd lost their last two games. Competition is fierce for that top five position. But I mean, it's funny. I remember being at the City Ground back in December when Spurs lost 1-0, and there was real disappointment after the game from Spurs. I didn't think we realised Forest would be as good as they have gone on to be at that point. And it was kind of, not at the start, but kind of early on into this real sort of collapse of the league for Ange. And it felt really disappointing. Whereas now, obviously, time has passed. Forest have showed that they're there to stay, at least this season. And Spurs have got worse. So there was a sort of grudging kind of acceptance of it all. Before we get onto some of Ange's comments, actually, I just want to talk about Vicario, because back to the mistakes that Ange is talking about, I think Vicario's decision to sort of fly out with a sort of Superman punch, which he is sort of kind of prone to for the second goal, it was just like, what are you doing? Like, everyone knows Chris Wood is an absolute animal in the air. He's brilliant. It was just like a poor decision making, and it's not the first time. Literally last weekend, he had a shocker against Wolves. We know he's a good shot stopper, but his aerial ability, which was flagged up massively last season with the set pieces, has been a real Achilles heel at times. And I don't know where we were sort of at with Vicario, because when you speak to him in the mix zone, he obviously speaks with such authority, and yet his performances at the times, particularly in the Premier League, have really sort of undermined that. I mean, I just don't think he's just not playing well enough. That's kind of what it comes down to with so many players, but particularly this goalkeeper at the moment. I mean, I do think there's even like a question mark over whether, I'm not saying they bench him, definitely not for the Europa League, but it's almost like he could do with having a message sent to him. And why not do that potentially in the Premier League game, given that they really don't mean a lot at the moment? Where do you stand on where Vicario is at the moment?
Well, it's interesting because last season, the problem at set pieces wasn't really to do with the kind of recklessness. It wasn't about kind of, you know, rushing out and coming for balls and not getting them. It was almost that he was being crowded out too much, that players were sort of getting around him and he wasn't imposing himself on the box enough. So it's a slightly almost the complete opposite to what we see in open play, where when balls come in, he sort of rushes out and tries to punch. And I don't know this, but is he overcompensating? Have they been, you know, coaching it into him that he needs to be more aggressive, more decisive, more instinctive when it comes to aerial balls? And now he's almost kind of just sort of coming for everything and not thinking enough. But I think it kind of taps into this with the wider problem at the moment with Spurs in the league, doesn't it? Is that there's no real accountability. You know? There's no, for all the players who are making mistakes, what's the blowback? Like what's the punishment that they get for playing badly in the league? You know, everyone shrugs their shoulders and says, "Well, it's the league; it doesn't matter." Everyone thinks that Ange, you know, in all likelihood, won't be there next season, so they're not even really trying to impress the coach long term. I just think that you've basically got a team who think they've got free hits every match. You know, they think there's going to be a new coach coming in. The only thing that is there is that they're playing to get into the Europa League semi-final or final side, aren't they? They're trying to get into that starting lineup. And I guess, you know, that is obviously a big carrot. Equally, I think probably a lot of the players who aren't in that starting lineup, let's say Bissouma, for example, I don't think he thinks he can get in the team. Like, I don't think he looks at this side now and thinks, I can displace Bergvall or I can displace Bentancur. So that is the problem that Ange has had ever since that City result, basically, when he really, you know, stuck his flag in the sand and said, you know, we're going to be rotating in the league for the rest of the season because the Europa League is the priority. Ever since that moment, that juggling act of trying to maintain a level of performance and momentum in the league whilst also prioritising the Europa League has completely gone out the window. You know, they have completely failed in that project. And, you know, I was very much for rotating in the league and prioritising the Europa League. And listen, if they win the Europa League, the whole thing would have been worth it. But they haven't managed to maintain that base level in the league. And look, there are other teams doing this, by the way. You know, Arsenal have been prioritising the Champions League. Manchester United, maybe not such a good example, have been prioritising the Europa League. You know, there are other teams who have bigger fish to fry in terms of Europe or domestic cup competitions. But not everyone are losing every single league game they play and putting in performances that are well below par. And that, I think, you know, it reflects badly on Ange. I do think that it reflects on a manager who right now doesn't have, you know, he doesn't have, I don't know if respect is the right word, but he doesn't have the authority in the dressing room to make the players play at 100%, even in matches that don't matter in terms of points.
Yeah. I want to talk a little bit about some of Ange's comments, which sort of speak to that. But rather than just be completely kind of doom and gloom, let's talk briefly about Richarlison, because that was maybe one positive from last night. You're talking about these players who can't get into the first team, like or the starting 11, like Bissouma. I agree with you on that. But Richarlison actually has that possibility, because not through centre forward, even though actually he looks like he's more likely to score a goal than Solanke at the moment. But I think Solanke's not nailed on for centre forward. But the wide left, with Sonny's injury and form, to be honest, feels like it's there for someone to sort of grab. And he's obviously been injured so much during his time at Tottenham, to the point where a lot of fans have kind of given up on him. But pretty much consistently said that under Ange, when he's been fit, he's been a real asset. He infects games. He's not the best player, most technically brilliant player, but he's a nuisance. He's brilliant in the air, to be fair, as he scored a great header last night as well, and was so unlucky not to score another one, were it not for a brilliant save from Matt Sells. That even though it's been a torrid time for him in general since he signed for Spurs, he looks like he, as long as he can stay fit, and that's always the problem, he could have a vital part to play in this Europa League sort of denouement to the season. I mean, hopefully three games if they can get all the way. I don't think he'd start any of them because of where they're at, but he has the possibility and he could definitely come on and affect the game. So, I mean, is that one sort of crumb of comfort from last night's performance? Although you thought the performance wasn't bad overall, but particularly Richarlison's impact.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think Tell is playing better. Is that just me? I've seen the last two or three games. I see a Tell who's much more confident.
Yes.
He looks like a player who thinks he's good. You know, I think in the first few games, Tell arrived as kind of a player who looked like he was just kind of like, oh, you know, I'm young and I'm nervous and, you know, I this is a big stadium. And I don't know, maybe that's unfair, but, you know, he played for Bayern after all. But I've seen the last two or three games, you know, obviously we had the penalty thing, but not just that. I think he looks like someone who thinks he's the best player in the team. And that is what ultimately you want from a guy who's playing left wing. And it hasn't all come off, and we haven't seen the kind of, you know, really clinical and ruthless Tell maybe that he might turn out to be in, you know, two or three years. But I think there is a player there who suddenly looks like he believes he can make an impact in matches. With Son injured and out of form, you have a couple of alternatives there, I think, that are you know, could be important. And I agree with you, you know, ultimately in the Europa League, these matches, it's not all about the starting lineup. It's the last 20, 30 minutes. Also, extra time, obviously, can be a factor. You know, having those options off the bench, attacking options off the bench, you can change games, I think, is a real bonus. And, you know, ultimately, this is what Ange wants, isn't it, from these league games. You know, we're talking about playing players into form, into confidence. For Charleston and Tell there, you know, I agree. Two good examples. And, you know, Kulusevski last night is not Pete Kulusevski yet, but he was buzzing about, you know, making things happen. The header was unlucky. It was a great header. And I think, you know, that game and also presumably the Liverpool game coming up will hopefully get him right back up to sharpness, which is absolutely essential for Spurs, because let's not forget Kulusevski is basically the team's best player.
Yeah, yeah. Just on Tell, I don't know how much this comes across when you're watching on TV, but obviously being at the last two games, and you can notice him demanding the ball more. And that speaks to what you're saying about the confidence and the fact that they feel like he deserves to be there. And it's notable how much he's sort of saying to, whether it be Spence or Udogie behind him or players around him, I want it here, I want the ball. That's, you know, as anyone who knows who's played football, particularly if you're a confidence player, that's when, if you start doing that...
That's interesting, yeah.
Yeah, and that's... But then that's where I feel for Ange, really, because like he's been given all these youngsters who are so early on in their career who are having to go through these early stages and having to overcome these obstacles of whether it be confidence or getting used to the level. amongst in a team that is riddled with injuries. And even when they get up to speed, like maybe Tell is now, it's not like he's blowing teams away by any stretch at this point. He might do in the future. And that is a difficult hand for the manager. But having said that, some of the comments he had after the game yesterday were, I think, a little bit troubling about where he's at generally and where the team's at. So he was asked whether... So obviously, I think Spurs are actually on for their lowest points total ever in the league, which is in itself a pretty horrendous statistic. And I think he was asked whether it was a motivating factor for the players to basically not be the worst ever. Kind of similar to how Southampton have used not being the worst Premier League team ever to as motivation. And he said, he came back and basically said, motivation's not a problem, but a lack of focus and concentration is effectively something that's been quite a constant for the team. And that is... that after sort of 18 months or more, wherever we're at now, months-wise under him, to have that lack of focus and concentration be a consistent issue, you've obviously got to look at the manager for that. Like, why is that happening? That is on him. Obviously on the players too, but if it happens consistently, like any trend, you've got to start looking at the manager. But like, how could that be possible? Is that purely now because it's human nature to have switched off to a certain extent when it comes to the Premier League? Why does it keep happening, Tom? Why does it keep happening?
Yeah, I agree. It's a problem. I'm surprised he is admitting that kind of so publicly. And dare I say, I almost think it kind of suggests almost a manager who also thinks that he's not going to be here long term. Is that fair to say? Like, I kind of think that a lot of what we've heard from Ange in the last 2 or 3 weeks, I'd say almost since the international break, there's been a kind of air of resignation about him, you know, and it, not just an air, like explicitly a couple of times he said, you know, even if, you know, I win the Europa League, you know, you guys think I'm toast kind of thing. And I don't think a manager who believed they were going to be here for, you know, the long term, would be saying that his players aren't focused, you know, that they're not delivering consistently because of their commitment, essentially, you know. And I mean, what can he do though, Tom? Like, what can he do to get more out of these players at this point? You know, I remember Russell Martin, you know, recently saying that he basically knew that he was going to be sacked by Southampton in the last game, I think it was. He basically, his team talk was, you know, show me the respect that we've come on this journey together. We've done so much together. Give me, you know, one last performance, basically. Is Ange's team talk effectively, you know, that team talk every single week at the moment? You know, that, you know, we may not be together next season, but give me your best for this 90 minutes. And maybe that works on a one-off occasion. Maybe it works in a big semi-final or even a big final. I'm sure Ange will have a brilliant team talk prepared for those games. But does it work at home to Nottingham Forest when you're 16th on the table? I don't know. Like, I almost have sympathy for him because I think he's almost on a hiding to nothing in terms of trying to motivate these players. And people will say, you know, look, they're paid loads of money. They're playing for Tottenham. They should, you know, have the respect for themselves almost to deliver their best performance. But I'm afraid that's not the reality. Like, players will always give 100%, if you like, according to the cliche, but it's that extra 10%, you know, that extra 10% where you've really got that fire in your belly and in your concentration and that intensity, which makes such a huge difference in the Premier League, that I think is ultimately just not there at the moment.
Yeah, it's like when you watch them at the moment, they just play in moments where they really give it a go and play well, like they did yesterday. But again, once they'd had a massive setback to begin the game for like the umpteenth time, and yeah, the stats are just pretty damning, aren't they? I mean, I know they had 22 shots last night, but they lost again, 18 defeats. I think if they lose another couple, which is eminently possible, let's be honest, I'd be stunned if they don't lose at Liverpool, given that Liverpool are going to win the title. If they, I mean, they may have won it already by the time it comes around to that, but they'll be looking to finish with a flourish, won't they? So that will likely be 19. They've already lost, I think, 8 at home this season, which I believe is a record. It's just pretty disastrous. But then what you're saying about the sort of Russell Martin-esque team talks, and it was really interesting. I heard that interview as well. And it was against Spurs, wasn't it? It was the fight when they were 4-0 down or 5-0 down at halftime.
Yeah, you're right, it was.
Yeah. 5-0 down, and then they drew the second half, but then he got sacked. And apparently he got told by the press officer just before he went into the press room with us that they'd already been, or the statement was being drafted. But how can that be the case when there's still a possibility of winning the Europa League and Champions League qualification on the line? I hope, but that still feels like it's not as cast iron decision as it would have been with Martin. But I do agree that since the international break, things seem to have changed a little bit in some of the things Ange has said. You know, if he does end up going, whatever happens, I think we will probably look back at that as a bit of a turning point. I mean, even the statement that Daniel Levy gave that comes with the financial accounts was very sparing, talking about his manager compared to the year before. So that would probably be a bit of a touch point that we may look at. But hey, I still think in football, even if the mood, and I don't know if people you're speaking to sort of sense that there is a chance that a very possible chance that even if he wins the Europa League, he could be gone. Because that's, I've heard that a few times and people have suggested it. But mood is massive. And if they don't actually win the Europa League and get into the Champions League, I don't know, having not won a trophy in 17 years and not won a European trophy in what would be 41 years, I think that could be very different. But the problem is, the way they're playing, it's hard to see it, isn't it, really, at the moment?
But I think these league games, you know, and I think it's hard to talk about the kind of Ten Hag dilemma, isn't it? Because in my mind, it feels like it's two or three steps away, you know, like it feels presumptuous, you know, let alone tempting fate. I mean, you hear Dan and Marcus the other day talking about, you know, flights to Bilbao and, you know, talking all about, you know, whether Spurs win the tournament. Yeah, I mean, there's just, you know, classic fate tempters, you know, all over that podcast. I was seething as I heard all of that yesterday. But obviously it is there, you know, and I'm sure this is what the fans are wondering as well. Like, you know, if Spurs did beat Bodo, if they did beat Athletic or Manchester United in the final, you know, would they then stick with Ange? And it's a fair question, you know. I mean, I think I've said before, I personally think that a professional Premier League football club who put, you know, millions of pounds every season into data, into analysis, into working out who the best right backs are and who the best coaches are, and should not make the most significant decision you can make in terms of the future of a football team on the basis of one match. Like that seems to me to be the absolute antithesis of what modern scientific good football clubs do, you know. And it would be a different thing, and I think this is where the league form, you know, people will say it's irrelevant, and it is irrelevant to an extent, but in an alternative universe where Spurs had won, you know, the last three or four games. Imagine if they'd beaten Forest last night, 3-0. Imagine if they had actually, you know, put in two or three really good performances in the league at the moment. That would be a completely different, you know, scenario right now. I think Ange could have built up a decent portfolio of evidence to support him in the league. I'm not saying it wouldn't have changed the season. It wouldn't have changed the complexion of what this season ultimately is all about. But regardless of what happens in the Europa League, the league, in my opinion, the Premier League, in my opinion, was almost a sort of the kind of backup evidence to either argument, you know. And if they fell in the Europa League and they've done badly in the Premier League, well, everyone says, well, look, there's no supporting evidence. If they had failed in the Europa League and also played very well in the Premier League over the last few weeks and put together some results, then I think there would be you could make a good case for saying, look, with this team, with the players back, Spurs were building up momentum. But unfortunately, the Premier League results have made it that the Europa League now is the be-all and end-all for Postecoglou. That is the problem, isn't it? Is that there is no other case to be made apart from winning that final.
Well put. I think a good note to end it on. I think we may be doing something later this week, potentially with all four of us, which has been a while ahead of the Liverpool game. But either way, thanks for listening and speak to you next time.
Cheerio.
Ryan Seacrest here. When you have a busy schedule, it's important to maximize your downtime. One of the best ways to do that is by going to ChumbaCasino.com. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino games like spin slots, bingo, and solitaire that you can play for free for a chance to redeem some serious prizes. So hop on to ChumbaCasino.com now and live the Chumba life. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.